Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to A Fair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal. Hi, and welcome to A Fair Recovery Radio tonight. I'm Rick, and tonight I'm here with Wayne Baker, one of our esteemed staff members, along with Lance Bain, our honorary chaplain for the evening.
Yeah.
Say something in the mic, Lance. Lance is over here, not too close to the microphone, afraid that, you know, we may call on him. So
he'll be talking before it's all over.
That's
I know him.
Because he's got a scripture.
He's a lot like
share.
You.
He's got a scripture he's got to share in just a minute as honorary chaplain. We really want to wish you guys a Merry Christmas as we approach the holiday here. And while the holidays can be a great time, in addition, they also can be very, very difficult times. And tonight, some of you just may really be going, this is absolutely the hardest holiday we've ever had, especially if you're in the middle of a crisis at this point. And our condolences go out to you. At the same time, we want you to know that there's still a great deal of hope and an amazing thing that I believe God is more than capable of doing in your life. I was kind of thinking, in fact, as I was driving in tonight, you know, why do we do this? Now, what is this program about? And it really is to offer hope. And in our tradition, there certainly is no more a season of hope than this time of the year when we actually celebrate the fact that the Word became flesh and there was a hope for all of us. So if you're in the midst of hopelessness tonight, I just want you to know that there is hope, and we want to extend that to you. Now, in addition, this evening, we're actually going to talk about how to deal with intrusive thoughts. Have you ever had those crazy thoughts where you would kind of like to be enjoying the holiday season or enjoying your family, maybe just enjoying a television program, when suddenly a thought comes crashing in on you and crushes you? And so the question gets to be, how do you handle those thoughts that come uninvited and begin to take you captive, that begin to take over the theater of the mind, so that you're thinking about that now instead of things that you would like to think about? In fact, for people going through the recovery from some sort of infidelity, this is one of the largest problems, dealing with the battlefield of the mind. So as we get going here, Wayne, I'm going to throw you under the bus here so I can quit
talking. Okay, I'm ready.
For a second. Okay, you're ready. So in your clients, have you ever noticed this issue with intrusive thoughts?
Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly with what you were saying, Rick, that this is the hardest part in the recovery from any type of infidelity from what I see. Because it's these intrusive thoughts, I guess is what we would call them, that just come out of nowhere and just can stay and linger and never go away. So, and I think, well, it's central. What were you going to say?
No. I think that's exactly right. And I do think, you just said they never go away. I think eventually they do.
They do. They do, but it just seems like you're in a dark hit for a long time, but they do go away. They do,
right? And they, as we said, they come quite uninvited. So, during the program tonight, for those of you who are listening in, I would love you to call in and share what have you found that works in terms of dealing with intrusive thoughts. What have you found helpful, because that could be an amazing blessing to someone listening this evening. If you've already gone through this and you've had to deal with those intrusive thoughts, it would be a great thing to be able to share that with other people. And Wayne and I will be sharing things that we found our clients doing through the years, and things maybe that have also helped with us as we've gone through this process. I was thinking that we might start by talking about the battlefield of the mind. I don't know if you think that would be a good idea or not.
I think it's a great idea.
Did you have something you want to add, Ronnie?
I wanted to ask you a question. When those intrusive thoughts come in for people, can you talk a little bit about if the person does not realize that these thoughts are coming in and how to deal with them until years later? So what do they do before they realize how to stop those thoughts?
I'm not quite sure. Did you understand that?
Well, I don't know exactly, but what came to my mind was that there are, I think we may answer that question or that thought as we go through the battlefield of the mind. Because, every day we're bombarded with reminders of infidelity or sexual addiction or affair or pornography or whatever you want to call it. Excuse me. And whether you're the betrayed spouse or the betrayer, the reminders and the triggers are there all day long, every day. So that's one reason why I think it's so hard to get away from it.
Yeah, in fact, some people will say that they think about this up to 70 to 80% of the day. Mm-hmm. So to say that this is, you know, just kind of an occasional thing, if you don't understand this issue, it is a huge issue. It's an issue where you can think about it 80% of the day, whether you're the unfaithful spouse or the betrayed spouse.
Yeah.
So,
And even if you're not focused on it directly, it's always in the background chatter. Just, you know, you're aware of it always back there.
Yeah, one of the assignments that we have people do is we'll have them list out 40 different reminders that can happen in any given day for their mate about this. And what's amazing and what's kind of sad is it's really not very difficult to be able to come up with 40 different reminders.
Oh, yeah.
Depending on the type of infidelity or depending, you know, if you're the unfaithful spouse, depending on what you were doing, there's all kinds of reminders all day long.
Yeah,
I know for people that have had affairs, particularly, just almost every television program, every movie, those all end up being reminders. Cell phones are reminders. Bills are reminders. Visa cards are reminders. Cell phone bills are reminders. Emails reminder.
The computer in general.
Computers doing. Yeah, I mean, couples that are doing well are reminders. If you've worked with Wayne and I, the names Wayne and Rick become reminders, which I really think is quite unfair.
That's right.
I don't know how we get thrown under the bus by this thing, but it seems to happen all the time.
Yeah,
I've had people that actually just see my office and break into tears, which I think is kind of sad.
See you at a restaurant outside.
Yeah, exactly right, you know, so they don't cry. Mm-hmm. Well, and a lot of times as those reminders begin, and we'll talk about the battlefield of the mind, those reminders can throw us in the abyss of emotions, and those emotions begin to absolutely whirl. And the pain created by those emotions actually create a two-choice dilemma for us. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, but we have a choice at that moment of trying to relieve the pain or the distress or whatever that reminder has triggered in us, or, you know, to kind of maybe go a route that is more self-serving, self-centered, probably unloving, or we can also just continue with kind of our path of trying to follow God. But sometimes, and this is the problem I think we come into as Christians, the path of following God and not responding to those really powerful emotions creates a great deal of suffering. And it's very difficult when those reminders come, I think, at times, continuing with a soft heart and with a loving attitude, or even continuing in faithfulness, because sometimes if you're an unfaithful spouse, those emotions will want to drag you away and take you off into something you really don't want to go back into again. In fact, you've committed not to go back into again. So that's really the first point of those reminders.
Well, don't you see, I see it with my clients that being dragged away. It just, that is such an accurate way to describe it, because it just seems so unstoppable for many of them.
Yeah, well, those emotions peg at a 10, and then suddenly they are so powerful.
Yeah.
Reason just seems almost out of reach at that point in time.
Yeah.
And you may know what you want to do, but I promise you there's going to be something else that, that really kind of grabs a hold of you.
Mm-hmm.
I know, let's go through the battlefield, and then I'll tell a little example, you know, me and stories.
Don't get him started.
I know. And the way we say it is that if you give those reminders airtime once they come in, if you dwell on them longer than 3 seconds, ultimately, that's going to become the point of your focus. And whatever captures your attention is going to capture you. Whatever you focus on is going to expand.
Yeah. You know, and on the focus thing too, Rick, and I think one reason why it's so hard, you know, I went to this conference in Dallas not too long ago and sat in on a neurobiology seminar.
That's a great term.
I know, neurobiology. Ooh. Just about the brain. That's all that means. And so... But what I learned in there was why it's so hard is there's this little almond shaped amygdala that's this cluster of neurons, and that's the emotional memory repository. And exactly what you just said, this is a biological reason why the thing that we focus on, the thing that we feed, it just continues to grow. Excuse me. And I can't talk. and so this amygdala, whatever you focus on, this is why it happens. From a physiological standpoint, that's what's going to grow in your mind. And so I think it's helpful sometime for clients to realize that it's not just some mental thing. There's a physiological reason why, too. And I think it's powerful for them to realize, from that physiological standpoint, why I need to change my focus. Because if I continue to focus on this, a year from now, it's going to be even worse than it is, because that memory is going to be even more hardwired into my brain than what it is now. That makes sense?
No, that's exactly right. And I think that as we continue that focus, and I like, you know, it's that emotional side of the brain, it really stirs those emotions more. And at that point, since we've now made dealing with the emotional side kind of our game, I think we begin to fantasize. We try to figure out what in the world is going to make us feel better. And we begin to use fantasy, and we come up with, we imagine all the different scenarios of things we could do that will ultimately make us feel better. You know, if I think about this, that'll help. Or if I think about this, that'll help. And I really believe, you know, that's where desire, as it talks about in James chapter 1, is going to be ultimately conceived. You know, we're all going to be dragged away and enticed by that kind of the old nature, the sin nature, the part of us that really wants to resolve this maybe in a way that isn't loving, that's unloving. And so now I've got the desire to actually go that direction. And so once that desire is there, what are we going to say?
Well, I just want to be clear that this battlefield of the mind that we're talking about, it's for both the betrayed and the betrayer do this thing, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I just had a client that I went through this, and he thought I was trying to help his wife get over his affair, and I said, no, this is for her, but it's for just as much for you as it is her.
Right. And I think that once that desire to kind of resolve this thing maybe in a way that we don't want to go, then we begin to plan how we could do it. And we kind of come up with, you know, I could do this, I could do that. And we run all the different scenarios, which again, back to James chapter 1, I think that's the birthing stage of this process. And the problem is, once we come up with the plan of how we're going to do the wrong thing or how we're going to do a hurtful thing, all we lack is opportunity. And I think the thing is inevitable. At that point, we're about to jump into this thing feet first. And that's the next thing that occurs, and we end up doing it. And as James says, once sin is full grown, which means ultimately it goes behavioral, then indeed it does produce death. You know, it crushes the people that are associated with us, and it also crushes us and our spirit and robs us of life.
You might be talking to a lot of people this holiday season that are alone due to infidelity, and the relationship has split apart. And what you said about someone being able to change the thoughts that they're focusing on, I know there's probably a lot of people out there that have split up this holiday season over infidelity here in Austin, and they could be experiencing those negative thoughts. And so I think you're talking to those people that are experiencing even more heavy-duty thoughts because of the holidays.
Yeah, I like to give the example. This is where I'll go ahead and meander here for a minute. But when I was growing up, just to give y'all an example, and this doesn't have to even be infidelity related. When I was growing up, my mom, God rest her soul, had the West Coast distributorship on guilt in some ways. And she used to do this thing. I would come in from school, you know, and be watching some really heavy-duty television like Hogan's Heroes or Gilligan's Island. I mean, important stuff like Star Trek. And then Mom would come in and she'd ask me to go get a gallon of milk for the family. And I'd say, well, as soon as the television program is over. And then Mom would say, never mind, I'll just go do it myself. And kind of do that little guilt induction thing, you know? And it used to make me so mad. And I would sit there and
but
have
not to, mad enough to get to go get the milk.
Oh,
right?
I'd go get the milk. No, she'd guilt me enough that I'd have to go get the milk, and I wouldn't see how that program had ended that I'd already watched three times in the reruns, you know? And so this is a little piece of baggage that I came into my own marriage with that my poor wife didn't know anything about. but I had deep scars from my mother's never mind, I'm just going to do it myself routine. So I remember a few years ago on Good Friday service, my wife called me up and said, hey, Rick, would you mind coming picking me up before the service? Now, I was supposed to be speaking that Good Friday service, and I actually hadn't finished what I was supposed to be speaking on, which the staff would say really wouldn't make any difference. I'd speak even if I didn't have anything to speak on. But regardless, my plans...
We'd say it in love.
We would say it in love. I know that. but my plans had been kind of like watching Gilligan's Island to finish what I had in mind to get done. And but due to my own lack of assertiveness, when she asked if I'd come pick her up, and actually you have to understand I live about 50 minutes out of town, so it was only going to give me about 10 minutes before church when I got back. It was going to take up my 2 hours there. And so I said, sure, I'd love to come get you. But actually, I lied because I just, you know, was feeling, I didn't feel like I could say no because my mom never let me say no. Well, actually, maybe she would have. I don't know. I never tried. So as I was going home, though, I was really mad. I don't know if any of you guys have ever done that, but I'm mad that she had the audacity to ask me to do that. And so as I was going in, I kept getting madder and madder, thinking about, and so I'm focusing now. Remember the battlefield of the mind. I've kind of started focusing on, you know, how dare she do this? I can't believe it. You know, I'm really stirring up all of those emotions. And I began fantasizing, you know, what in the world could I say to her that would ultimately help me feel better? And I just imagined all the different possibilities and what I could do and how I could say it. And right before I got home, because I worked on it for about 35 minutes, I'd come up with just the right thing to say to her to make my point. And so I'm turning on to the last road to my house, and the Lord spoke to me, and he said, you know, Rick, if you say this, it's not going to be a good Friday service. It's going to be a very bad Friday service. And I said, you're right, Lord, I really shouldn't say this. This would not be a loving thing to say. So I pick her up, get her in the car quickly, we take off, and I probably lasted about 10 minutes before I finally said it. And he was right. It was a very bad thing to say. And you know, it's funny because the more I began to try not to say it, the more I began to resist saying it, the more powerful it became. And I think in this battlefield of the mind, the thing and the biggest mistake we make is we begin to resist it by thinking the solution is not to think about it. So everybody that's listening right now, if you think about a pink elephant, just visualize one in your head, get it up there really good. I'd like you to call in as soon as you quit thinking about the pink elephant. Because the way we function as human beings, the more we try not to think about something, ultimately, the more we end up thinking about something. And I believe that's what Paul is talking about in Romans chapter 7, where he says, the things I want to do, I don't. The things I don't want to do, those are the things that I end up doing. He says, actually, as it is, it's no longer I who do it, but it's sin living in me. And in a very strange sort of way, the harder we try not to do something, in many ways, the more we empower sin to kind of drive us crazy and to bring us back to that point. So in this battlefield of the mind, what's happening is those reminders actually can capture us and just kind of take us away. So do you want to add anything to all of that rambling there, Wayne?
Well, I mean, you're just right on. It just it does capture us. It's overwhelming. And like you said a few minutes ago, I think logic and reason just... it goes out the window.
In fact, maybe we could get our Chaplain Lance here to read Romans chapter 7. So we think that would be a good thing, so that Lance is actually opening his Bible. This is a good thing. I really wanted to be able to share that passage and one other passage here in a minute. So since he actually drove here to keep Wayne, oh, he gave me the Bible. He's not going to read it. He's pretty bad. Well, let me read that passage anyway. We know that the law is spiritual, but I am unspiritual, sold as a slave to sin. I don't understand what I do. For what I want to do, I don't. But what I hate, I do. And if I do what I don't want to do, I agree the law is good. In other words, there really is another way other than following those reminders that we want to go. Then he says, as it is, it's no longer I myself who do it, but it's sin living in me. I know that nothing good lives in me, that is in my sinful nature. For I have the desire to do what is good, I just can't carry it out. For what I do is not the good I want to do. No, the evil I don't want to do, this I keep on doing. Now, if I do what I don't want to do, it is no longer I who do it. He says it again. But it's sin living in me that does it. So I find this law at work when I want to do good, evil is right there with me, for in my inner being I delight in God's law. But I see another law at work in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind, and making me a prisoner of the law of the work within my of the law of sin at work within my members. What a wretched man I am! Who will rescue me from this body of death? Thanks be to God, through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then, I myself in my mind am a slave to God's law, but in the sinful nature a slave to the law of sin. Therefore, there is no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus, because through Jesus Christ the law of the Spirit of life set me free from the law of sin and death. And ultimately, that's the point. It's the law of the Spirit of life that sets us free from the law of sin and death. Now, at your conference, when you were studying about the, what do they call that thing in your head there?
The amygdala.
Yeah, exactly. We keep Wayne here for science. What did they suggest?
They did used to call me Dexter.
So what do they suggest you do with the amygdala at that conference?
I don't know that part.
You just got the information.
I just got the information on why it is the way it is, but I think we have the answer for that on what to do. I think part of it is, you know, just be aware. You're laughing.
No, I think it's good. I'm just curious as to what they said at the conference.
Well, I think it helps just to be able to label it. But before we go into that, you know, I think we ought to give the phone number out again.
Yeah, and I think we ought to give the email address out again, too. Okay. Lance was supposed to be reminding us of that. So, again, if you've found a good way of dealing with the amygdala, please feel free to give us a call here at area code 512-365-9930. That's area code 512-365-9930. 365-9930. And you can also email us tonight at radio@hope-now.com. That's radio@hope-now.com. And I hope you'll give us a call and just share ways that you've learned to deal with intrusive thoughts. Thank you.
If you could have the marriage you've always wanted, even after being cheated on. If you could avoid losing a huge chunk of your standard of living, why would you sentence yourself to an empty, lonely room? Divorce sucks. The emotional trauma and financial loss are much worse than what you think. And infidelity can be cured. It's not as hopeless as it seems. AffairRecovery.com. Almost 90% of the couples completing our program not only enjoy restored marriages, they report a much higher level of marital satisfaction. AffairRecovery.com. Don't give up before it gets better. Join the ranks of those who found new life. AffairRecovery.com. Where healing happens.
Does your life seem void of meaning? Do you struggle with depression? Is marriage not turning out as expected? Are you disappointed in the intimacy you share? Has an unwanted behavior taken your life hostage? Do uncontrollable feelings flood uninvited into your life? If so, we can help. Crossroads Counseling is a group of highly trained mental health professionals dedicated to Jesus. Crossroads Counseling is unique in its team approach. Each member has developed a specialty in order to complement their overall goal of helping each person they serve experience the freedom and abundant life afforded through the life of Christ. Give us a call, 512-346-9299. That's 512-346-9299. Or visit our website at crossroads-counseling.net. There is hope and healing. We believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Welcome back to Affair Recovery Radio, where we believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal. Now, we've got a caller on line one, Scott. So, Scott, do you have a question for Wayne here?
No, sir. Just Merry Christmas to you guys, and thank you for taking my call. I've never called into a radio show, so I'm a little bit nervous.
I've never called in before either.
You guys were saying if you have any experiences, good experiences you'd like to pass along. Well, I have one if you'd like to hear that.
We would love to hear it.
I was addicted to marijuana from the time I was 15 years old, and recently in November, God basically just freed me from that, and I give all the glory to Him. I'd been praying and really trying in my own power to stop. You know, I would stop using for a while, and then, well, after a while, I would just go back to it, and I didn't understand why. Just like Paul was saying, what you were quoting earlier, I felt just like that. And then I cannot remember right now where I got this prayer from, but I probably heard it from a pastor or, you know, the Lord gave me this some way, but He broke my desire for drugs and other thoughts. You know, before when I had been trying in my own flesh, my own power to stop them, they would always be in the background. I would always still have the desire. But what I would do is in the morning when I would pray, I would ask God, you know, God, when I have these thoughts to use or when I'm tempted to use or when I'm tempted to be angry or think any other way, if you would please give me the strength, because I don't have any strength. If you would give me the strength that I need to turn away from the temptation, and if you would, you know, take that away from me, you know, so that He can be glorified and I can live a clean life. And, you know, every day I go out, and even today before church I got tempted to be angry. I get tempted to be angry when I was in church, and I got tempted to use by an old friend who called after church. Satan just hits you all the time. You know, you really can't almost get away from it. But God took that desire away from me, and now it's like, you know, it's just no big deal. I don't have those reoccurring thoughts, and I give him all glory because, you know, it's something that I tried, and I finally had to come to the realization that, you know, I've been trying to do this, and I haven't been letting God do this. And I've been fighting it, and I needed to give the battle to him and let him work his power through me, because that was something I couldn't do. And he's done that, and, you know, I'm just totally free from it now. And also, I was a smoker for, gosh, about the same amount. I'm 36 now, and I've been a smoker since I was probably 20 and addicted to marijuana since I was 15, so it's been a long, long, long time. And but God, you know, took the glory for that, and now I'm clean. I don't have any desire to smoke. I don't even really think about it. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience. One more thing. I'm sorry to take up so much time.
Oh, no, you're doing fine, Scott.
But one more thing I'd like to pass along is I listen to Pastor Charles Stanley a lot, and he has I listened to one of his sermons one time, and he was talking about this exact same thing, and briefly, one thing I wrote down that he spoke about, he said that a thought reaps an action reaps a habit reaps a character, and a character reaps a destiny. And those thoughts that we entertain, they get mixed in with our feelings and our emotions, and I'm a little bit of an emotional person, and I was letting my emotions take over those thoughts, and before you knew it, you know, I was involved in what was going on, and I couldn't get out of it. But when I let Jesus, you know, take control of that, he took that power, and when those thoughts would come to me, when those temptations would come, that it was just like go right past me, and it was no big deal. And I'm so happy now because of that.
You bet. Thank you so much for calling in. Those are great suggestions.
Yes,
and,
sir. Thank
and I
you.
Love the fact, Scott, the way you separate temptation from desire.
Yeah.
That theologically, you are spot on.
Oh, yes, sir. And that's exactly what it was. But, you know, like I said, I kept trying to do it in my own power. It's like, well, I'm going to quit. I'm resolving to quit. I can do this. You know, I can hang out with my friends and not use. I can just ignore them, you know, and I can change the way I live. I can, but no. And it was a sad, sad attempt, and it was really brought me to a place of humility and a humbleness, you know, realizing that, you know, how great God is and how wonderful it is to be a child of God, and that what Jesus did for me on the cross. It's just awesome, and I'm so thankful that Jesus is my Savior, and thank you very much for letting me call in.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Scott.
God bless you. Merry Christmas.
God bless you.
Man, that was good.
Mm-hmm. It's very good.
He's still in our thunder for the second half of the program here. Yeah, and that really gets to what do you do about it? How do you overcome this thing? And to me, guys, we have got to understand that temptation does not define us. If temptation defined us, then the person with the most temptation would be the vilest person. And that would make Jesus the vilest person that ever lived, because he's been tempted more than anyone else in history. Temptation is not the problem. And I think one of the things Scott just pointed out is we need to be able to see temptation for what it is. And one of the things we talk about, a little acronym called LIFE, and the L stands for label it. And so when that temptation comes, rather than letting it define you and think, oh, this is just what I want, you need to quickly be able to say, you know what, that's not me, that's sin in me, and label that thing as sin.
Or my flesh, or my sin nature.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it.
Something.
Yeah, just get it. You know, it's my OCD. I don't care. Obsessive compulsive disorder.
It's my amygdala.
It's my amygdala. It's my addiction. But you need to get a degree of separation from that thing and immediately sit there and say, that's not me. And one of the things that Scott also said, I think, that's really good is he talked about his weakness. Wayne knows that my favorite verse right now is probably 2 Corinthians 12, where Paul says, you know, because of all I had done, I was actually given the gift of an addiction to keep me in constant touch with my limitations. At first, Satan's angels did his best to get me down. What he did, in fact, was push me to my knees. There certainly wasn't any danger of me walking around like I had my act together. At first, I couldn't see my addiction as a gift, and I begged God to remove it. Three times I did that. And then he said, Paul, look, my grace is enough. It's all you need. You don't need to be whole and you don't need to be fixed. Actually, my strength comes into its own in your weakness. Well, when I heard that, I was glad to let it happen. So I quit focusing on my addiction and I began appreciating my gift. It was a case of Christ's strength moving in on my weakness. And if I can begin to see the temptation not as something that I am supposed to handle or that I'm strong enough to handle, just that that's sin. And then the I stands for identity. That's not me. And that's what I say all the time when I get those temptations. I go, you know, that's sin. That's not me. That's sin in me. Or that's you know, my addiction. That's not me. You know, that's, you know, my old nature, whatever you want to call this thing. At that point, I begin to have a chance to do something about this thing because I can begin to fight it and I think cry out to God to get help in my time of need. You want to add anything to all of that, Wayne, since I'm just over here rambling?
No, you're doing a great job.
go on.
Well, just the whole the by doing those first two steps and what Scott actually talked about, it devalues the thought that, you know, I need to go look at porn or smoke marijuana or go spend excessively or something. And that's a key step. I think the sooner you do that, the better off, right?
Right, absolutely.
Because it's like, Patrick Carnes talks about pushing the boulder up the hill in some of his stuff. You know, if we catch that boulder at the top of the hill as it begins to roll down, it only requires about 50% of our effort. But about halfway down the mountain, it's going to require about 100% of our effort. And a little further down still, it's going to require 150% of our effort to get back up there. And we're pretty much sunk by that time. So the sooner you can begin to act on labeling these thoughts and claiming, declaring your identity in Christ, you know, I've been crucified with him. It's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. Saying, you know, just declaring, yeah, I'm weak. And where I'm weak, he is strong.
Right, and devaluing that thought is the main thing. It's not real, which brings us to the F. So L stands for label, I stands for identity, and F stands for focus. And we have got to shift our focus so that we don't stay focused on the temptation, what seems appealing or enticing in terms of getting rid of our distress, but rather we fix our eyes on things above. We focus on something radically, radically different. And it's funny because sometimes in my office, I'll sit there and hit the key fob on my car and set off my car alarm. I never know it's my car alarm.
Are you the one that does
that? I'm the one that does that all the time because I fidget all the time. And so I'll sit there and start complaining because people are letting their car alarms go off. But you know what's interesting? Within 20 minutes, because we always go on and start talking about something else, do we hear the car alarm anymore? And the answer is no. It fades off into the background. And the reason it does is because we know no one's stealing the car. We know that that car alarm going off is just a false alarm. I mean, it's not real. I mean, we wish someone would steal the car. It'd be great. Just shut up the stupid car alarm. But in reality, temptation is very much like that. If we can understand that it's not real, that, you know, it's not, if we can devalue it just like that car alarm, if we can focus on something very different, it will fade off into the background, and research will show this one within 20 minutes. And one of the things we say is, I've got Jesus on this hand, and I've got my temptation on this hand. And if I'm focused on my temptation, saying, God, help me, God, help me, God, help me, eventually the temptation will overcome me. But if I fix my eyes on Jesus and just let this other temptation go off in the background because I know it's not real, and I stay focused on something radically different, within 20 minutes, that temptation will begin to go away. In fact, it will go away. I won't even remember why I was, you know, what I was thinking about when I began to kind of shifting that thought off to something else.
Yeah, so I know we talk about activities for our clients to do, and I know you tell your story, so I'm not trying to steal your thunder.
No,
you memorized when you started this. You memorized Sermon on the Mount, And you also tell the story of a client you had that was a non-believer, because not everybody we see on a daily basis as a Christ follower. But you tell the story of a guy that memorized the lines of Hamlet.
Yeah, I did all of Hamlet, man. It was cool. And so he kept always quoting Shakespeare all the way through our sessions, which I thought was just exceedingly.
To be or not,
not to be.
Be.
He'd always find some line that was relevant to whatever we were talking about. Say, well, Hamlet says. But you know, the fact of the matter is, what I found is when I would quote 20 or 25 minutes worth of scripture, I just didn't have enough horsepower in my ears, between my ears, to think about what I was being tempted by and to recall that much scripture at the same time. And so it literally, you know, gave me something else to focus on, and the temptation would ultimately go away by the time I was done. Then I'd be thinking, now, why did I start quoting that? Then I'd start all over again and quote it because
you remembered.
I remember, and I have to start again. I'm a little slow. But the shifting the focus is going to be the biggest thing. Get your mind on things above, as Paul says in Colossians chapter 3. You know, start fixing your heart on things above, not on earthly things. And then the E in that life, you label it, you use your identity, sit there. Because you know what? None of you guys that are Christ followers, what we would say is none of you are sinners. You're all saints. You're children of God. You're the righteousness of Christ. We want you to remember who you truly are. And therefore, since you know this really isn't you, you know, you sit there and you shift that focus. And E stands for evaluate. You know, if you really think about the things that tempt us, one of the questions I ask all the time is, you know, if I were to do that, is it going to bring life or is it going to bring death? I think for the hurt spouse, oftentimes dwelling on what their mate has done, is thinking about it going to bring life or is it going to bring death? Oftentimes those, another question that I ask when I'm listening to those voices up in my head, I'll say, you know, is this the voice of the shepherd or the voice of the butcher? Because we as Christ followers, as his sheep, we only have two voices. Because sheep only have two voices in their life, right? The voice of the shepherd and the voice of the butcher. The voice of the shepherd is always life-giving, caring, nurturing, loving, encouraging. The voice of the butcher, on the other hand, is always critical, negative, fearful, condemning, judgmental. And a lot of times we need to be able to start asking, you know, whose voice is that up in our head? And if it's the voice of the butcher, again, it's not the voice we want to focus on. And so we want to shift that focus. And finally, the question I always ask is from Romans chapter 6, you know, what benefit is there now in those things that we're so ashamed of? Those things led to death. You know, and I always say, you know, is there any benefit? And it's funny, I use the analogy, you know, if someone put a glass of gasoline in front of me and a glass of lemonade and said, hey, you've got to drink one of these, you know, well, which one, guys, do you think I'd drink? Well, heck, I'm going for the lemonade, right? I sure don't want the gasoline because I know that stuff will kill me. And it's the same way with these thoughts. I need to come to the place where I devalue that old nature or that kind of addict part of me to the point where I go, it's silly to think about that. It's just ridiculous. I mean, stuff, it just has no benefit. And I don't even think about it in terms of right and wrong. I like to devalue it in the terms of, because sometimes I'll do something if it's wrong, just because I think it may have value even if it's the wrong thing. But if I see it as silly, if I'm able to devalue it to where it just makes no sense, then at that point, I think it makes more sense to focus for me on something radically different, because there isn't any benefit in going down that path. Did you want to add anything there? You looked like you were going to say something, or maybe you were just kind of looking over here, guys.
I'm just you know, looking at you in all your wisdom.
Oh yeah, well, right. But there is one thing, that a caveat here. As the hurt spouse, and Leslie and I have had this talk a lot, please do not hear me saying that you don't need to process and grieve over what's happening, that there's not benefit in kind of walking through the pain. I'm not talking about not dealing with the pain. And so this is a really tricky piece here as we go through, how do you deal with reminders? There comes yeah. a yeah.
Sorry, we well, don't want we, don't, we never encourage anybody to circumvent this stage.
Right.
You want to. You've got to walk through it, and in our groups, in our EMS, our emergency marriage seminars, that we have one coming up, January 10th, 11th, and 12th. Is that right?
Right, I believe that's correct.
So we will always help people walk through this process, and like you say all the time, it takes a year and a half at least to get through all of this for most couples, but there are some times where it takes a little bit longer.
Right.
And what circumstances or what areas do you see, Rick, that it can take a little bit longer to get through this?
Well, I think if someone for the hurt spouse,
okay. I guess is
so
what I'm
for the
of.
Unfaithful spouse, I want to say I can say without an exception that fantasizing about all the good times that happened during that stuff, that's unhelpful. Mm-hmm. You really don't want to be playing with that type of fantasy life. But for the hurt spouse, I think that, especially if they've got trauma in their background, sometimes it takes much longer to process through things. And now, I think that, you know, it's kind of like, when do the reminders, how do you deal with all of this? I think Leslie would say you've got to be able to come to the place where once you've processed it and you know you've worked your way through it, there does come a point in time when there's no benefit in thinking about it anymore. But oftentimes, guys, that's about a year down the line. That may be 18 months down the line. We're not saying that that's a short period of time, because, you know, ultimately you've got to be able to allow yourself to mourn and to grieve as you go through this process. And there's a lot of grieving that comes with some sort of betrayal, because there's so many losses.
Yeah. Well, the other area where I was thinking that it could be harder, and I think you talked about this a couple of weeks ago maybe, was when the truth continues to trickle out.
Right.
That can make it, these reminders and these intrusive thoughts just kind of linger, just because as somebody begins to heal, and then 6 months later, a little bit more of the truth or a little more detail of the truth trickles out, it just opens it all back up again, it seems like. You agree?
Oh, I'd agree. I think as you keep finding new stuff out, then it always opens the door for more processing and just chops your knees out from under you. Mm-hmm. That's a huge problem.
Yeah.
And I think we're doing a terrible job explaining when the reminders with the hurt spouse, how you deal with that. I think for me, if you're listening and just going through the middle of this thing, if you're the unfaithful spouse, please understand the battle that your mate is fighting right now. With these reminders, every Christmas program can be a huge reminder of what's not for them anymore, and it may feel like for them that their Christmases have been destroyed, and every Christmas you've ever had in the past was all a lie, and many things like that can be going through their head. Please understand that this is a huge battle that they're going to be going through, and be patient because. Just the fact that they're still with you and trying to work through this speaks volumes in terms of godliness and love. Because they're really willing to walk the Via Dolorosa, the way of the cross, so that you can have life with them. And that is the most amazing gift. I mean, there is a redemption that I think is astounding when a hurt spouse really is willing to be conformed to that aspect of the image of Christ, when they're willing to suffer for your sake. So please don't be impatient with them. But if you're the hurt spouse, please be aware of this battle too, and don't let these thoughts ultimately define you and I think capture you and take away your ability to see God through all of these things.
Do you have any advice for couples who have revealed there was infidelity and someone left the situation altogether, the people who are left alone when they tried to be honest?
Well, if you're talking about the for the unfaithful spouse, I just think that's painful. And I think being apart with other brothers and sisters, don't isolate during this season. We talked about that some in the program last week. For heaven's sake, try to find a community to be a part of, people who will love you and put their arms around you. Go to a Christmas Eve service, you know. Just be around people.
And don't you think, Rick, that that's the number one thing the enemy's going to try to get you to do is to stay at home by yourself and lick your wounds and isolate. That's the thing that I see that kills all of us is isolation. We were built and made for a relationship.
Right. And we think it's the shame. Mm-hmm. And guys, you know, we'll always say pride and shame are things that are both anti-God. They're the same thing, but they are anti-Jesus. Because it's really, you know, that pride and shame both say that it's about something I do versus something that Jesus did. And those of us coming from a Christian perspective have to accept that it's what Jesus did, not what we've done. Again, which is why the season is such a cool season. And I guess we probably ought to, as we're kind of coming toward the end here, a couple of things we need to talk about. We need to mention there is a Harboring Hope weekend, the 4th, 5th, and 6th of January. And if you are a hurt spouse, I think there's only 4 spaces left. That thing is almost full. And if you'll go to the website, affairrecovery.com, that's affairrecovery.com, they've got some great deals on this weekend because they're doing some special things. Marketing-wise, and also just they're trying to produce some ongoing product. And for that reason, you can attend this seminar very, very cheaply. It's affairrecovery.com, and sign up for the Harboring Hope Weekend if you're a hurt spouse, and that'll be in Austin here the 4th, 5th, and 6th. And John and Leslie will be leading that weekend. The following weekend, the 10th, 11th, and 12th, we have one of our EMS weekends, and certainly would love to have you guys join us if you want to come as a couple. Actually, I already know some couples where the hurt spouse is going to the Harboring Hope weekend, and then they're both coming together on the EMS weekend. And if you're at the point of crisis and you want to begin to consider what would it take to save our marriage, the EMS weekend would actually be a tremendous blessing. And we also, in addition to that, have an online course. If you're listening to us and you're out of state or you're incapable of getting here to Austin, we have an online course beginning. I believe there's a lunch course and an evening course that'll be starting in the next week or two. And again, just go to affairrecovery.com. Or you can also call at 888-5-ARC-EMS. That's 888-5-ARC-EMS. Or you can also call us on our landline at area code 512-346-9299. And we want to thank you guys for joining us this evening. Hopefully this has been helpful. Wayne, you want to add anything? As we kind of close down tonight?
Just thanks for being with us.
Absolutely.
Maybe next time we'll get Lance to talk.
Yeah, I tell you, boy's been really silent. Nobody's going to believe he's really here. Lance said he was afraid once he
got
on
mic,
we were going to throw him under the bus.
How about Merry Christmas?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was going to close with Merry Christmas. And God bless, guys. We'll talk to you one more time before the end of the year. Please hang in there. If you need any help, please contact us. We'd love to help you get through the holidays. Blessings.
Thank you for joining us tonight and being a part of the newest addition to our services, Affair Recovery Radio, radio through the power of God. We'd like to invite you to go to our website, affairrecovery.com, and register for our free newsletter, as well as taking advantage of our free podcast. You will find that these resources are invaluable if you're trying to recover from some form of betrayal. We are here to help. We can also be contacted at 888-5-ARC-EMS. That's 888-5-ARC-EMS. And remember, there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Good night. God bless.
Then the word of the Lord.